Queridos hermanos y hermanas, dear friends, the story of the two disciples going to Emmaus is really a tale of two journeys. First, obviously, a story of a geographical journey. About 7 miles, they say, from Jerusalem to Emmaus, taking maybe 2 hours, depending on the pace and number of rest stops along the way. We really have not been able to identify Emmaus with certainty because there are several possible places that would qualify within the range of about 7 miles. We generally think it was the town called Abu Ghosh, now after a brigand who dominated the area a century and a half ago or so. But that's one journey. The other journey is the more important one. It's a journey from dejection and distress, from the horrors of the experience of an execution by crucifixion, from the utter confusion when all hope seemed to be dashed and destroyed on the one hand, to a new understanding and a new conviction. That's another kind of journey. Needless to say, that spiritual and intellectual journey was far greater than 7 miles. It's a galaxy difference almost. From confusion to conviction, from tragedy to triumph. The first geographical journey was made by foot, one step at a time. The second, by insight, by sudden bursts of understanding under the guidance of this stranger who showed up and explained the deeper reality and the bigger picture to Cleophas and his wife, probably. We've all had similar moments when we suddenly understood something in a new and fresh way. When we made our own journey from one state, intellectual, emotional, to another, with great surprise to ourselves. Maybe puzzled by the actions of someone else around us, family, friend, colleague, I don't know, puzzled by the actions and then suddenly understanding the motivation and seeing it all fresh in a new way. Or this past week, Spring Assembly of Priests, the leaders of the group asked me if I would say a short tribute to Archbishop Weakland for his 60th anniversary. And I kept asking them, well, what's the program? Well, how does it all fit together? And they kept saying, well, we haven't worked that out yet. We're not sure. We just don't know. And I kept thinking to myself, these people, these are planners, and they don't know what they're doing. Well, it turned out that they were all fibbing to me because the whole thing was planned to be for me and not for somebody else. So a moment of understanding what was really going on. It's another example. The whole shift from despair to delight on the road to Emmaus took place through conversation. And I can't overestimate the crucial significance of human conversation for changing our minds, for conversion on our journey. We need to listen. We need to talk. God addressed us. God speaks to us as friend, and we respond. And God's speech to us as we respond by grace changes us and unites us and transforms us. And consequently, every kind of communication that we have is somehow imbued with that grace of God capable of changing and uniting people. Marriages. Sometimes couples have come to the point where they are silent because they understand each other so well that they don't need words. On the other hand, sometimes they come to silence because they really haven't talked for a long time. The importance of conversation is just crucial. This past Monday, I had the morning Eucharist at Old St. Mary's. And it was the morning with that great big headline, Osama bin Laden killed. A group of people come for Mass, morning Mass, about 50 every morning. They're on their way to work. And at the end of the general intercessions, I paused for a moment and I said, I need to pray, but I'm not sure how to say what I want to say. So it took a moment to say, on the one hand, I saw the headline blaring. On the other hand, I hear reports of jubilation around the country. And I don't know how to say it, but it just doesn't seem right that there's something wrong with that kind of jubilation. Death, we're not jubilant over death, and certainly not over some kind of execution or killing or whatever. It just doesn't seem right. So I want to pray for a just world in which dignity of everyone would somehow be woven into the way we treat each other. Well, I had several people come up afterwards and say, thank you for saying just that. We don't have the words either, but we know that it needs to be addressed in a different way. So once again, it's conversation. It's finding the way to speak about something, even if you don't quite know how. It's conversation that unites, that explains, that deepens, that moves us forward. Call it conversation. Call it communication. Whatever you will, the exchange of ideas, the explanation of perspective, the sharing of experiences which breaks down differences and brings people together. That's how God works in our lives. That's how God always works. The point is that we absolutely need to talk about it, that we need to talk about our faith, that we need to talk about the witness of our values that impacts our experience and gives us new meaning and insight. And that's precisely how we grow. The gospel story. The two travelers saying to this mysterious stranger, are you the only one who doesn't know what's been going on in Jerusalem, the things that have happened? Are you the only one? And this mysterious stranger saying, what things? I smile at that every time I see it. What things? As if he didn't know. But he needed to have them explain their experience. He could not presume it because, though he knew it, for the conversation to be fruitful, they had to talk about it from their perspective. And he elicited that from them so that then he could go on and talk about the great paschal mystery that the Son of Man had to suffer and had to rise. The early church developed a whole list of quotes, hints from the scriptures, from all the scriptures, from the prophets, from the Psalms, from the stories of early Israel, hints of the way in God works. At face value, they said one thing. But in light of the resurrection, the things that were said achieved a deeper meaning. For example, in our first reading, the quotation from Psalm 16. The psalm says God would not allow his Holy One to experience corruption. But in the light of the resurrection, those words, clearly, we understand them, but they take on a deeper sense of meaning. It's what we call sensus plenior. The words are there. But in the light of conversation, understanding, they take on a greater force. We have young men and young women who go off to boot camp. They enlist in military life, and they go off and you say, well, tell me why you're doing this. And they say, well, I just feel I want to give my life for the country. Ah. Then something happens in Iraq or in Afghanistan, and it becomes a tragedy. And the words said take on a deeper meaning. Well, we need to talk about that, to explore it. Easter is far too important to just celebrate for one day. And it's far too important to celebrate as we used to for 1 week, one octave before the liturgical change. It's now 50 days of Easter to pray over it, to talk about it, to explore what it means. God raised Jesus from the dead and changed the whole world. We need to think about it. We need to talk about it. Because that's how God works.